the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the MLS show on Beyond the Pitch. My name is Scott Nichols, your host, and joining me, as always, is Otis Earl. How you doing, Otis?
Good, Scott. It's been, a week now, and a lot of games have happened. We know this MLS schedule is as crazy as ever. So, yeah, a lot to cover, a lot to talk about, some shocking results, to be honest, and results that definitely surprised us. And then some teams that seem to just be still moving on in their gears and doing what we come to expect for them. So, yeah, definitely a lot to discuss for this week's show.
Yeah, and we've been away for a couple of weeks here. So, like Otis said, and a couple of weeks is, you know, almost like a friggin' year in MLS time, of course. We know that. But look, we don't want to focus too much because this is an MLS show, okay? It's not a Red Bulls show or a Toronto show or a Galaxy show, but those are the three teams that we're going to be focusing on this week because those are the teams. Look, these are the stories right now. You know, I like stories, and we have three stories. And look, let's start with the Red Bulls. And I know that they had that great tie against Toronto FC at home. But I think the very fact that we're calling it a great tie says a lot about where the Red Bulls are at right now as a club. What is wrong with them? What is wrong? Like, because I absolutely cannot work them out. Some weeks they look unbeatable, and some weeks they look like they're the Philadelphia Union that started the season. What do you think they need to do to turn this around, Otis? And will that look? Does the draw against Toronto, the tie against Toronto, does that help?
I like how you said that, Scott. How you said them tying and drawing against Toronto seems like a good result for them. You know, knowing New York Red Bulls and the club that it is, that isn't really something you'd expect them to celebrate. But that's where they are in the season, and that's what they have to deal with right now. And to be honest, I think they'll take the positives from it. Watching the game, it could have gone either way. It was a great, great spectacle. Two teams that are very good going forward. But I thought this was a good chance for the Red Bulls to show themselves, show their character, because we know they haven't had it easy recently, losing three games in a row, away at Kansas City 2-0, away at Philadelphia 3-0, and then that shocking result at home to Galaxy, where your coach is coming after the game in his post-match press conference saying, no life, no commitment, no belief. Didn't recognize his team, he said, at halftime. And the group wasn't playing to its full potential. And Jesse Marsh was interesting, because I like when he went to the press and he was saying this, he took responsibility for it. He was never separating himself from the group. He was never saying the players did this, the players did that. It was we did this. It was unrecognizable of us. Actually, he went to say it was a worst home performance since he'd been there as a coach. So when your coach comes out and says that, now it's all eyes on them. You've got the whole league watching you. You've got the best team in the league at the moment. Best team in the league, who have won, Toronto won 6 on the bounce, coming to you, coming to your home, your playground, so to speak. And so now everyone's watching them and seeing how they bounce back. And I spoke to Aaron Long. I wanted to know sort of how training had been that week before the game. Had it been intense? Had it been any slight tactical switches? And he said, no, nothing new. We kept it. We didn't panic. It wasn't panic mode. We just sort of got back to the fundamentals, got back to knowing who they are as a club, get back that identity that's made Red Bulls a team that's been successful in this league for many a year. So I think it's going to be interesting now to watch, exciting to watch how the Red Bulls turn this around, because I think there's a lot of positives to take from it, drawing with the best team in the league. Now they should hopefully kick on and get some wind under their belt and start to push up the league, because anyone who watches the MLS and are a fan of the MLS don't like seeing Red Bulls down there. You know, we're used to seeing them up there fighting for the supporters' shield. So hopefully they can, like I said, take the positives from the game. And now they play New England at home, another home game against a big rival. And then two away games at Montreal and Philly. Let's see what they've got for us.
Just real quick on that. What do you think is an acceptable sort of run of results in that next three games. Before we get into everything else, but like, what do they need to get from those three games, Otis?
They got to win that New England game at home. That's a massive rival. I was actually in I was in preseason with New England, and we played Rebels in our preseason, and there was a few little kicks and a
bit chippy.
A few chippy words between both benches. And I remember after the game, I sort of spoke to some of the New England regulars, sort of Kellen Rowe and those guys, and they said that it's definitely a rivalry and it gets a bit heated during their game. So that's definitely a game they're not going to want to lose, bearing in mind what happened this preseason. So they'll want to win that game, and then just because of the position they put themselves in, they're going to want to take points from both Montreal and Philly. They've just got to look at every game as a win at the moment, so they can climb back up that table. But I would say 6 or 7 from those 9 points has got to be the target.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, because if you look at where they stand right now in the Eastern Conference, even though we can sit here and spin it as they're only 1 point ahead of the Union, who have been terrible for a long time and are resurging now, and the same with the Revolution, who are resurging now, they're also only 3 points out of Orlando City, who at one point we were saying they're legit, they're going to do it, and this is why you shouldn't do this, because MLS will come and bite you in the ass, and that's what it's done with us so far, especially with Atlanta. Yeah. But anyway, that's on a tangent. But look, they need to go on a run, you know. And it doesn't surprise me what you were saying about how you talked to Aaron, and he said that nobody's panicking, because Jesse Marsh doesn't strike me as that kind of person. He doesn't strike me as the sort of, okay, you know, we're panicking here, we're plummeting, we're spiraling, let's get into, I'm going to run them harder, I'm going to work them the most that they've ever been worked, you know, until we get out of this rut that we're in. He doesn't strike me as that kind of guy, and Aaron was very forthcoming when he was on the show, the last show we did, saying, you know, look, he is an open book, Jesse Marsh. He will tell you exactly where you stand at all times. So it doesn't surprise me that a guy like Jesse Marsh would take responsibility, that would put all of the blame on himself and the players as a franchise. You know, because let's remember, the Red Bulls at this point, look, they're an MLS original, essentially, with no MLS Cup. You know, that'll grate on them, you know. These fans want MLS Cup. They want it. And they've been so close so many times before. But look, they have some problems that they need to address. And I think the summer transfer window will give them an opportunity.
Where do the problems lie for you, Scott? Is it, you think it's defensively? Are they not? Is it their midfield that looks a bit out of shape? Because this isn't a Rebels that we're used to seeing.
No, it's not. I mean, what you're seeing, they have a very low salary sort of cap number right now, the Red Bulls. And by low, I mean, you know, Dallas spends about $5.8 million, and I think the Red Bulls are about that right now. I'm used to seeing the Red Bulls be up at like $10, $11, $12 million because they've always had players like Henry, like Cahill, these big stars. I'm not saying that they need to sign stars, and albeit aging stars. I'm not saying they need to do that any longer, because I think we're all under the impression, and we all agree, that we're moving past that now. That's becoming the MLS of the past. But look, I was talking to Mark Fishkin of the Seeing Red podcast, which is a really, really fabulous podcast if you're a Red Bulls fan. Actually, if you're an anything fan, it's just a very interesting podcast. And he does a very good job. So I spoke to him, and we were talking, you know, getting Aurelien Colin back to pair with Aaron Long in the center of midfield is going to be huge for them. Huge for them, because right now, you know, Perenelle, I remember, looked like he was a world beater when he played next to Miazga, but he's just not the same anymore. And you need to stem the bleeding. And I know we always talk about, you know, injuries, people coming back from injuries as being a new signing. I think Colin is going to be like that for the Red Bulls. I really do, because he'll provide a bit of leadership. He'll provide a bit of experience. And yeah, you know, he's going to get the odd red card. But I think sometimes you need that a bit for, you know, to sort of fire up your teammates and go, that was never a red card. And, you know, we're going to play for Aurelien, you know.
Well, Scott, also, I think vocally and leadership qualities, you know, Colin's a guy who's been around the league. He's played for Kansas City, he's played for Rebels, he's an experienced veteran, so to speak. So I think that's, because you've got, right now you've got Aaron Long, first year in the league, first year as a starter, already got the most minutes for the Rebels. And sometimes I look at them defensively, and they look a bit sort of all over the place, a bit sporadic, like they're very easy to get after. They can hit them on the break. So bringing, like you said, bringing Colin in, not just in terms of him as a player personnel-wise, now you've got a guy who's, and I've played against Colin before, he's very vocal and he's very, very commanding. So now he can, it's going to help the whole back four, you know what I mean, as a defensive unit, because he can, when you've got Kamal Lawrence and Zizo bombing on like they were at the beginning in the Galaxy game, and then they were leaving Aaron Long completely exposed, you know what I mean, leaving him 3v1 at the back. Now you've got a commanding centre-back who can say, Aaron Long, get tight to me, Kamal Lawrence, get tight to me. And they're going to start to defend more as a unit. And then once you've got that, then there's a foundation for them to play on, because we know what they can do going forward. And we know once Bradley Wright Phillips and Royer and Kleshkin get in their groove, they're going to make chances and score goals. But when you're defending like that at the other end, then it's hard for you to win games in this league, because it's ruthless. It really is.
Yeah, I agree. But let's go back to the Kleshkin thing that you just said. When they get Kleshkin going, how do they get him going? Because I think that's problem number two. Problem number two is that say what you want, they missed Ax McCarty in ways that you don't even know. Or we don't even know. And by you, I mean you people listening. But, you know, they do. They miss him a lot. They really do miss him. Because and the way that this relates to Kleshkin is Kleshkin keeps having to sit deep. I keep having him deployed against, alongside, I should say, someone like Sean Davis. And that's not where he sort of thrived last year. And even if he was playing alongside Dax, Dax has that play where he allows Kleshkin to get into those sort of very advanced positions to play those clinical balls. I mean, look, he dropped 20 assists last term, and I know he has 5 already this year, but it hasn't been, he doesn't feel as big of a factor to me. He doesn't feel as though, if Kleshkin wasn't in the team, would the Red Bulls really notice that he wasn't in the team this season? And that's not an indictment on him, I don't think. I think it's an indictment on the Red Bulls midfield. And I know, you know, we both know that they're not happy. The players are not happy that Dax isn't there. And they're not happy that he hasn't been replaced in such a way. And I think they're trying to do this youth movement a little bit like Dallas do. But frankly, I'm just not sure if... and even though they're one of the better teams, I'm just not sure that they're as good as Dallas at doing it.
Well, I don't think that's anything negative. I think most teams in the league would mix a Dax McCarthy, you know what I mean? Mm. That, of course, it reminds me of sort of when that old Liverpool team that had like a Xabi Alonso and then they had Gerrard sort of playing off Torres. It reminds me of that when you have Dax McCarthy there, not only does he give, Kleshkin doesn't have to get, because we know he doesn't want to come back and defend. That's not his game. He wants to be up there with Bradley Wright Phillips causing havoc. So when you've got Dax back there, not only just defending and doing what he's got to do when his team don't have the ball, when his team do have the ball, he was very good at getting it forward early. So Kleshkin's getting the ball to his feet quicker. Whereas now it's almost like the midfield, it's taking too long to get up to him and Wright Phillips, and it's, defenders are able to get tighter to him a lot quicker, and then he loses his space and the little pockets that he likes to drift into. It doesn't really work out because the team aren't passing it as fluently and as efficiently up the pitch. And that's when you have that midfield linchpin like a Dax, like a good sitter like that, then you lose out on that forward passing and getting it to your 10 quicker. Because you ask any attacking midfield player, he wants the ball in his feet. As soon as that holding midfielder's got it, he doesn't want to be keep swinging it around the back, or he's never going to touch it. And if he does, then their holding mid or their centre-back's just going to be right up his arse and we can take that out. It's going to be too tight to him and not giving him the space for him to, like I said, to be able to function and do what he's got to do.
Yeah, I think half of the problem as well is that they don't have a lot of speed on the wings. And this is another thing me and Mark Fishkin talked about. We were saying, they don't have a lot of, well, I say we, Mark was predominantly saying, that's one thing that he wants them to target in the summer transfer window, is he wants them to go out and get an attacking threat from the wings. And I think it was Matt Doyle, one of my first things that I read on a Monday morning when I wake up after all the MLS games have been going on, Matt Doyle's column on the MLS website, the Armchair Analyst, and he was saying, look, the fact that they're very slow on the wings means that teams can pinch them. they can pinch him in, and that's what Bradley Wright Phillips thrives on, right? Is gambling on balls in the box. He even said, I read a quote, and he said, I'm not a first ball kind of player. I'm not strong like someone like Altidore, but what I do is I use the first ball as a distraction and then go and attack that second ball. And he's made a living off of doing that in MLS, but he's having trouble doing that right now, I think, with the level of players that he's got out wide putting those balls into him. But a good win against Toronto. Sorry, a good win. It felt like a win. A good draw against Toronto. You know, hopefully that will sort of spark something for them, because their fans, they are getting restless. They needed, you know, Mark, again, the same conversation me and Mark Fishkin were having. He was like, these fans, they want a win. They need a win. Wasn't a win, but it might feel like one because Toronto has been so good. And look, moving on to Toronto, they're now, what, 7 games unbeaten since the last time they lost? And we were talking at the beginning of the year, well, they've only won 1 of 6 to begin the year, and now they're the best team in MLS. And I know we were saying, let's not sleep on them. But did you expect them to be quite this good?
I didn't, Scott, to be honest. I thought maybe the shock and the aftermath of MLS Cup last year might have, you know, brought a bit of heartbreak that would have been difficult for him to get over. They might still have been in, might still have been in a sort of dormant state this year, and you know, maybe took their time to get going. But no, they've come right out the blocks. They've come quickly. Greg Vanney's obviously got them fired up again to go at it. You know, last year we was, I'm sure he's telling them, last year, you know, we were so close, didn't go our way. Maybe now they feel like this is their year this year, and they're playing some really, really good football, and we know they've got talented players, and we know they've got a great club, great backing from owners, great fans. So I want to see Toronto do well this year. I'd like to see them lift the cup. I think they're a team that's not only entertaining, is that they do well tactically too. They defend well, don't give you many chances. Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of positives they could take, and I think they'll see that as a point gained rather than 2 points lost. They'll game and I'm sure do all they can to get the next 3 points and keep sort of breaking away from the pack as much as they can, really.
Yeah, they're averaging 2 points a game right now. And I checked back through to 2012. The only team to ever come close to that during an entire season was the 2012 San Jose Earthquakes. So, look, maybe they can't maintain 2 points a game. But, look, you look at the team that they've got. I mean, Giovinco, you know, easily the best player in MLS. And he has been either injured or sort of not playing or not fit. And he's injured again at the moment. They're not relying on him any longer, you see. Yeah. They're not... Toronto's not just sitting there, and it's not just get the ball to Seba and go. You know, look, you have Raheem Edwards. That's a great story. Even Toussaint Ricketts. Toussaint Ricketts looks like so at home in Toronto. I didn't realize he had that much ups. Because that guy, if you put a ball, if you hang a cross in the box, he is going to get it. You cannot stop him. They're the best team in MLS for me right now, hands down. Even before Dallas lost to San Jose at the weekend, I thought they were the best team in MLS. Look, I'll even throw Jozy Altidore a bone, because, you know, we all know how critical I can be of Jozy Altidore, but he is being an absolute beast right now. And look, you know, so Kurt Larson, if you're listening, this is your moment. This is your moment, buddy. I've just admitted it. I've just admitted that Jozy Altidore is doing very well, and I think he's actually been a very good player, not just for Toronto, but for MLS, especially this season.
One thing that, what I liked about Jozy too is because he missed that the 81st minute penalty kick, didn't he, against the Rebels, and I like how he came out to the press after and he sort of took responsibility for it. He said, "I didn't hit it as well as I wanted to, and I take full responsibility myself to raise my game when I can." And he said, "Tonight wasn't my night," which I liked that as a sort of the big leading man, the striker. That sends a good message to the rest of his teammates that, you know, like when he's made a mistake or he feels like he hasn't done it, like him taking full responsibility. That's something that I just think will resonate through the squad and in the locker room, that, you know, they're all sort of in it together. It was just interesting to see how he reacted after that, and I think that sort of shows maybe the togetherness of the squad.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that they really do have a combined, a collective attitude now of we should have won MLS Cup last year. And I think you're right. You know, I expected them a little bit to maybe sort of back off a bit and maybe be a little bit dejected about not winning MLS Cup, because it's easy to have done that, right? The team who doesn't have a shot on target the whole 120 minutes manages to go ahead and win the game. I mean, that must be absolutely soul-crushing. But I think that one thing that we haven't talked about with Toronto is not only their, you know, their desire to avenge the MLS Cup loss, but even though Giovinco's not been playing, there's a guy that has been playing, and they picked him up in the summer, or in the off-season, I should say. Sorry, when we say summer, I'm just thinking in English terms now, you know, when our off-season is, but, you know, but they picked him up in the off-season. His name's Victor Vasquez, and this man has 8 assists. He leads MLS by 2 assists this season, all right, from Chris Pontius, who has 6. Now, this guy has 3 game-winning assists. He even has a goal to his name, and I think it flew a little bit under the radar because he's not a fancy player. I actually had to ask my cousin about him because my family is from Belgium. They're huge Club Brugge fans, and that's where he came from. So when I found out, I said to him, Nick, you know, tell me about him. And he said, you know, look, everybody at Club Brugge liked him a lot. He was a very good player. He actually said my cousin Nick said he's like Fabregas in the sense that he knows that a pass is there before it even happens. He came from La Masia, Barcelona's academy, remember this guy. So did Fabregas. So that doesn't surprise me. Excuse me, that doesn't surprise me. So when I hear Eric Giacometti, who is Toronto's social media director, saying he is 3 steps ahead of everybody else, that resonates with me. I think that shows on the pitch every week. And that's how they're getting by without Giovinco, you see. That's how they're getting by without Giovinco. The one downside to this guy, Vasquez, what I will say, is apparently the reason that the Club Brugge sold him, and they would have kept him, I'm told, but for this, is he's pretty injury prone. He's pretty injury prone. So we'll see how Vanny manages that. And I think he left him out of the side the other day as well because of his knee. He's had knee trouble in the past and he just wanted to make sure he was okay. But look, that might not mean a lot to people. But like the point is that he has quality and he's showing it now. But there's a lot of good things about Toronto. Raheem Edwards is one of my favorite stories. Did you hear about this? Raheem Edwards takes the subway, or the metro, whatever you want to call it, to training and to games because he is saving up for a car.
That's slightly humbling, right, Scott?
Yeah, yeah. But it's just funny. I just think it's a great story. I just think that they're becoming quite likable, even though they're spending a lot of money and, you know. Tell me what you think about this. Tell me what you think about this. Jesse Marsh is asked after the game against Toronto, how do you feel about their depth? You know, talk about their depth. They have so many options. And he said, quote, I'd like to see their salary cap. What do you think about that? You think he thinks they're skirting the salary cap a little bit? Or do you think that's just good fun?
You think he was taking a slight dig?
I think it could be construed as that. You know, I think it could be maybe a little bit of jealousy. I don't know. My initial thought was, come on, man, don't do that. You know, if you're going to look, the whole reason that we've put, you know, general allocation money and targeted allocation money into this game is so teams can have better teams, you know. I don't know. Do you think it was a dig, or am I just being silly here?
Yeah, I think it might be reading too much into it, Scott. I just, is there any way that teams can get away with the, with being over the salary cap?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
The league, there's ways they regulate it. And
oh no, well they do. Look, I think it just goes to show that perhaps, you know, and I don't mean to keep coming back to the Rebels on this, but I think the fact that Toronto, look, we know between me and you, and you know, we can tell everybody, it's no secret, Toronto's organization has a lot of money, a lot of great investment. You know, and they're willing to spend money. And I think that it just goes to show that even with a salary cap, you do have the haves and have-nots in this world. You know, right now, the Red Bulls are a have-not. You know, they don't have a star. They don't have those big, you know, those big names anymore that they're spending money on. And maybe that's the difference in these two teams right now. Because I know they weren't separated by much, and Jesse Marsh's coaching will keep the Rebels at a level, but Toronto, you know, the depth that they have, you know, with people like Toussaint Ricketts, with people like Raheem Edwards, with Giovinco, with Altidore, with Vasquez, you know, all these players, you know, we're, look, Toronto's the best team in MLS. That's what I'm going to end that on. Toronto's the best team in MLS. I expect them to go ahead, and I expected them in Dallas, actually, in the final for MLS Cup. I really do. Yeah. I think that's the obvious choice, especially after Portland got trounced. And I know they had 10 men, but after they got trounced by Montreal 4-1 the other day. But look, a team that I don't expect to be doing that well in the playoffs this season, perennial playoff contenders, MLS Cup contenders, but I don't think this year, is the Galaxy.
A team we're not used to saying that about, Scott, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, you live in LA. What's the feeling out there with this team?
Well, we've spoken about it before on the show. I just think it's been it was always going to be a transitional year for them. You know, they sort of lost the generation, the Beckham generation, if you want to call it that, with Donovan and Keane.
Yeah.
It was, and obviously Bruce Arena leaving. It was definitely going to be a sort of make it or break it year for Galaxy, but you know they're putting some results together now, winning 2-1 away at Minnesota. Giovanni scoring an unbelievable goal. Not sure if you listeners have seen it, but I don't care what league you watch, that goal was top draw. But they're slowly starting to look a bit more like the Galaxy we're accustomed to seeing. Still playing some good football going forward. Alessandrini looks a great player. We were talking about him earlier, weren't we, Scott? He's got great left foot, great sort of finesse in the final third. And I think once they get, now they've got Giassi back, they've got that sort of athletic legs in behind, start to be able to stretch teams. I still think the whole Galaxy, and you got to remember, this is a club that, I know from being in the league before, everyone tells me that this is a club that turn it on when it's about to get to that playoff time. You know, like training and the sort of camp, it's relatively relaxed until they hit, you know, the summer, July, August time before it starts really heating up. And then they start to go, they start to increase the intensity. So when they're hitting playoffs, they're in fine form. And I still think they'll sneak in, Scott. I really do.
Oh, look, I think they'll sneak in, but I just think that I don't think that they're equipped to make a run at MLS Cup this year. To be clear, that was what I was trying to very badly say.
Yeah.
But no, going back to how you're saying how they get rolling in July. It's funny you say that, because you know, we've talked about him, you know him. I used to work with him down in Houston a lot. It was Chandler Hoffman, who is currently at RSL. He's in the Monarchs right now. Probably will get promoted to their first team because they have any strikers there right now. Well, apart from Euro. Mm-hmm. But still, he would say, look, you know, the Galaxy's training methods are different to everybody else's in the league. They're different. You know, it's very relaxed. And then they get rolling and rolling and rolling as the year goes on. And it was that way under Bruce Arena. And Alpha's been part of the organization for a long time. So I think that he'll keep it the same way. I don't think he wants to upset anybody or upset the sort of balance of that team. Especially with regard to preparing for matches. However, you mentioned Giassi Zardes, that he's back. They need to get him going. They need to get him going. And this is a guy that I can't for the life of me work out. I remember seeing him for the first time play against Panama for the US men's national team when I first moved to Houston in January of 2015. And I thought, wow, this guy looks incredible. But every time I've watched him since then, it's like up and down and up and down. And I don't know whether, you know, he's the most technically gifted player. But he, like you say, he's athletic. And again, I'd like to say that he has an eye for goal, but sometimes you do wonder. You know, look, I'm not trying to, like, you know, pile in on Giassi Zardes or quote-unquote young American players, but if that's the best that they've got leading the line, is that maybe sort of a problem? Like, if he was a foreign DP playing this way, do you think he'd get more criticism?
Yeah. In terms, are we talking in terms of in front of goal, goals?
Yeah, I mean, he's a striker who doesn't score that many goals, frankly, right?
He's been a striker who's been deployed out wide, though, hasn't he, since he's been at Galaxy? So I wouldn't really say he's an out-and-out nine. Striking. Even when he's played for the national team, he's played out wide. But then maybe that's something, if you're the head coach, you go to him and say, okay, Giassi, I think this is your year. You know, we don't have Keane anymore. We don't have Landon. Now we want you to be the main man. Now we want you to be the man who leads the line and our main goal scorer. And look, he's only just coming back from injury. He's still a young guy. Let's give him some time to find his groove. But yeah, he's never really struck me as an out-and-out poacher, a guy who really, you know, sniffs out those half chances.
Never a 20-goal-a-season guy kind of thing.
No, but I mean, you can work on those sides to your game, though. I know goal scoring is definitely a natural instinct. But I've played against Giassi in college, and I've seen him score some good goals, let me tell you. I just think, he's just got to be given a run of games, let him find his form. And he's got the players around him, so before we're too quick to judge, let's give it another 5 or 6 weeks, and then we'll have this conversation again, and then
The great Giassi-Zardes debate of 2017.
Yeah, because he is a player, though. He divides opinion, doesn't he? I know with most people, because I know a lot of people come to me and have said before, oh, I don't rate this Giassi. I don't get what all the hype is about. But he's a smart footballer, and I think he's a good role player too. If you need a guy to do a job on the left, you need a guy to do a job on the right. I think he'll get the job done 7, 8 out of 10 most. He'll do a 7 out of 10, 7 out of 10 job most of the time.
Yeah, maybe we just expect too much of him.
Exactly.
Do you know, maybe it's that we put too much on him.
This is his first year, like I said. Yeah, his first year maybe being the main man as number nine. Let's see what he's got. But yeah, I don't think we should be judging him at this point in this season.
And we've seen how well that's worked out for us so far this season, judging other teams and stuff. You just never know with MLS.
It's a crazy league.
Yeah, he could come on after this and score 20 goals. I mean, we don't know. Like, he could score a hat-trick in every game for the rest of the season because MLS, you know. But there you go. But look, I mean, look, Giovanni Dos Santos, I just want to talk about him. He looks like he's playing much, much, much better. I think he has more of a freer role now. Because Giovanni Dos Santos, for me, is best when he's sort of playing in that free role, finding space. I mean, just look at the goal he scored that you talked about at the top of the segment here. Alessandrini plays a really dinked little ball in, and he finds space between, I don't know, three defenders, and just flicks it in with the outside of his foot over the goalkeeper into the corner. Just incredible. And that is just what he does very well, Giovanni Dos Santos, I think. You know, and he is a bit Jekyll and Hyde, and, you know, some days he'll look anonymous for the Galaxy and then destroy US men's national team for Mexico. But look, these goals will give him confidence. And I don't think there's anything stopping him doing what he did last season, which was 15 goals, 11 assists. Ability is not stopping him doing this. I think that, you know, either he needs a little bit of help from the rest of his team, or he needs to, you know, just look, as long as he keeps playing in that free role, I think we'll see last season's Giovanni Dos Santos coming in.
Yeah, for me, I think Giovanni, mate, he's one of those players where when things aren't going that well, almost like you could say a Mesut Ozil almost. When things aren't going that well, I don't think he's the kind of player who's going to pick the ball up and drive his team on and say, okay, this is what we're going to do and sort of inspire the rest of his team. I think he's one of those that when everything's going well and the team's playing well and everyone's functioning, then you'll see the goals, then you'll see the assists, then you'll see the beautiful flicks and the tricks. But he's never really struck me as a player that, like at the beginning of the season, he was on a drought, really. He was largely sort of absent, so to speak, from making and creating goals. And yeah, but I think, like we said, in terms of Galaxy as a team, it was all about, okay, well, let's see what they've got. Let's see if they can start to sort of put something together. And now you see, now that the team's doing well, you see Giovanni do well. But yeah, he's never struck me as a player that's going to stand out like when his team isn't doing that well.
Do you think he needs like a leader, like, you know, a real leader on the field at all times? Because it, like, I think we're both in agreement that he is not the guy that's going to sort of say, you know, gee everyone up, say, come on, let's go and get after it. You know, it's only one more goal we need to get back in this game to tie it or whatever with 10 minutes to go. He's not that guy. And the Galaxy captain, I believe, is Yella Van Damme. And, you know, and they had to bench him recently because he's been playing pretty terribly. So, you know, they have that problem. He's playing better now, Yella Van Damme.
Well, I think Jermaine Jones could be that guy too. Obviously, they've been missing him through injury.
Well, they have been, but you know what? This is the next thing I was going to get to with you, is that do you think I think potentially Jermaine Jones may be more trouble than he's worth. Do you not agree? I think they play better with him out of the team.
I haven't seen him. Jermaine Jones is a good player. I think we haven't seen him in the Galaxy show enough to be able to make that assumption. I'd like to see Husidic Pedro and Jermaine Jones in the three midfield, and then Alessandrini, Giovanni, and Zardes are front of the three. And then you could sort of rotate those three. Maybe you could have Zardes as a nine, sort of leading the nine as a traditional target striker, or you could pull him wide, Alessandrini wide, sort of get two movers, two pace wide men, and then Giovanni as a sort of as a nine, and you maybe want to drop in a bit more like the Messi style false nine.
Right.
I still think there's a good team there, mate. I really do.
Yeah, and look, they have Bradley Diallo playing very well, young kid out there at right back, and then they've got Ashley Cole on the left-hand side. A lot of experience there in this team. Yella Van Damme, former MLS Defender of the Year. This is a bad team, but, you know, you wonder then, what's the deal? Where is this going? Why aren't they performing at the level they are? And I know that Kurt Arnolfo has to be wondering the same thing. He has to be wondering the same thing. Is Jermaine Jones causing trouble? I don't know. I don't have any information to support this. People say that he could be, but I think that's just because they know Jermaine Jones's fiery personality. But for me, that translates well into a leader on the field. It's just whether you can jam him into the lineup in such a way, like you said, like you were talking about, maybe in a three-man midfield to make him effective, because you see how effective he can be from being out in Colorado last season. You know, we know how effective he can be. So, look, we need to give him a chance, because you know as well as I do, you know, we've said on the podcast already today, but they get going eventually, the Galaxy. So, let's see how it works out. I don't think that we have to panic too much, but I'm sorry, I'm sticking with what I said at the top of the show, sort of thing, at the top of the segment. I don't think they're going to win MLS Cup.
You're sticking to your guns.
I'm sticking to my guns. They're outside of it right now. They're outside of it behind teams like Vancouver. I mean, when you look at the Western Conference, you look at how good Sporting Kansas City have been, how good the Dynamo are at home, how good FC Dallas is just in general. You know, the San Jose Earthquakes, who beat FC Dallas, giving them their first loss the other day with that incredible goal by Hika. What a goal that was. And I think it's a goal season contender. And look, and right now, the Portland Timbers are in fifth position. You know, 4 points ahead of the Galaxy. I think the Portland Timbers, despite their run of form recently, are one of the best teams in MLS, up there with Dallas, up there with Toronto. So I expect at least those five teams, and then you've got a sort of like a, I don't want to say a six-way tie for sixth place, but, you know, you've got a lot of people love Vancouver. They get, if they're getting in, the Galaxy isn't. A lot of people, you know, are saying don't sleep on the Sounders, even though I don't think that they're another team that I don't think are going to get in. And if they get in, the Galaxy don't, because I still think the other five teams that we've mentioned, Earthquakes, Timbers, Dallas, Dynamo, Kansas City, they're all getting in for me. So I don't know where the Galaxy fits in that mold, in that section. You know, I really don't. But
they'll make the playoffs, mate.
They'll make the playoffs. You're putting it out there. You're doing that. You're making that prediction now.
I'm making that prediction that
making
they squeeze.
Making it now. May 23rd.
LA Galaxy squeeze into the playoffs, mate.
LA Galaxy squeeze into the playoffs. There you go. Oh, my God.
I'll quit my job and I'll quit this podcast if I'm wrong. How about that?
Oh, those are fighting words. Ah, okay, yeah, please don't. Please don't, because I love having you on the podcast, and you know, and look, you're way more interesting than I am. So there you go. You can't do. Don't do that to me. Don't do that to me.
I'm trying to make things interesting, Scott.
I know we're trying to make things interesting. Okay, just to close, just a quick word on Dallas. You know, I know they lost their last their last mm-hmm. game to San Jose, yeah. but ultimately that was because of an absolute stormer of a game by Bingham in goal.
He has those occasionally, doesn't he? A couple across the season where Bingham yeah. is feeling it. He really is.
Yeah, and again, great goal by Hika, however you want to pronounce it. You can tell me on Twitter how to pronounce it if you like, guys. But either way, incredible goal, and he's done that to Dallas as well. He equalized against Dallas, I think, in the game in San Jose late. So he's burned him before, and he'll burn him again. But even so, they're again, second best team in MLS for me.
Yeah.
Still rolling. There's not a moment that goes by that I don't think Dallas isn't in a game. And they're playing at Chicago in their next game. All right. Yeah. Then against Houston in Houston.
In Houston, yeah.
Look, you're familiar with this team. Everyone knows you're familiar with this team. First of all, what makes them this special? And do you think, you know, knowing what you know about the team, do you think that they have the mentality to go to Chicago and win that game? And do you think that they have the mentality to then, you know, go two games later or three games later to Portland and win that game? Are they the kind of team that can go and win in these difficult places to go?
It's funny, I was watching an interview with Vicky Lowe, the midfielder, who was I was a guy I was somewhat close with when I was on the team. And he said, he was talking about how the team will bounce back. He's like, this is something that's ingrained with us, ingrained as in our culture is we don't let these losses get to us. And you could tell by he was confident, and I'm sure that comes from Oscar and the whole staff. You know, they're playing five days later. They play on Thursday, and they'll want to be back out there right away. Knowing Oscar and knowing how those guys are over there, they'll want to be back out there right away, and they'll be doing everything they can to win. And Dallas is rarely a team that goes on big loss streaks. You know, they're very good at turning things around, and like you said yourself, always in games, always fighting in games. That's just the culture of the club. So no, I don't think that's anything for them to have to worry about, because this first loss of their season. And San Jose's always been a bit of a bogey team for them, actually. Even when I was there, they always sort of struggled against them. I think maybe the physicality in Dallas, we all know how Dallas like to get the ball on the ground and play football, and Earthquakes has notoriously been sort of one of the more direct, uglier, quote-unquote, teams.
Well, they're a Don Kinnear team, right? I mean,
exactly, yeah. So maybe a clash of styles has sort of maybe made them like a Dallas's bogey team. But no, I think they'll go to Chicago. That's going to be a great game too in Chicago. Chicago are flying, so that'll be definitely one to watch on Thursday. But no, I think I want to see Dallas will go there and get a result. But no, I definitely think Dallas, they'll bounce back and keep getting some wind under their belt. Oscar won't let them keep losing games, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and this podcast will probably go out after that game. So let's if Dallas loses this game, it's mm-hmm. not a big deal, right? It's not a big deal if they lose this game, you don't think?
No, they're still in a good position.
They're still in good. I mean, look,
and then they've got two home games after that, and they take care of the home games.
Yeah,
they'll be fine.
So you think they can afford to drop points two games in a row? If they're going to drop two games in a row, I guess. Look, I mean, and we talk about good wins, and we talk about bad losses, but we don't talk so much about good losses. And I know that we have briefly mentioned that phrase on this show, but I think that these would be two good losses for them, would be San Jose and Chicago, because you don't mind losing to teams. You know, you never like losing at home, and you never like losing, especially if you're Oscar Pereja. But I think that, you know, if you're going to lose to two teams right now, a Chicago Fire team averaging 1.75 points per game, which in any other season, if it weren't for Toronto on 2 points a game, that would be enough to win you the Supporters Shield. I checked.
No, but that's not the mentality at Dallas. So Oscars will win every game you win, and the teams that are doing well, you especially win. So yeah, as much as you might from the.
So he likes to take them down a level. He's like, we're going to cut them down. They think they're good, we're better, and we know we're going to cut them down.
Yeah, no, he goes into every game's a cup final, so no. And no, he'll go, especially after their first loss of the season, that would have been something he'd been saying to them. That would have been something they'd been puffing their chest about them being the only undefeated team in the league. And now against San Jose, of all teams, like I said, who've been sort of a slip-up team for them now. They'll want to go out. They'll want to go to Toyota Park in Chicago and get back on track. So, that'll be an interesting game. I think Dallas will they'll pick something up there, if I'm honest.
It's going to be incredible because it's one of my favorite, and I know it's one of your favorites too. The partnership in that midfield of Dax and Schweini, mm-hmm. you know, you got Nikolic up front, who we were talking about has sneakily sort of everyone's just become okay with him being the best striker in MLS. It's like it's like John Oliver, mate.
He's a natural finisher, which you don't like. MLS is known for the athletes and the great. He's six foot five players, but Nikolic is a smart finisher, and he's got great movement, subtle movements, and you give him a chance, and he usually sticks him away. And when you've got like the midfielders of Dax and Schwein, like we said, he's getting the service, and Akam out wide, he's getting the service.
Yeah, they have. I mean, can you imagine if they had been able to keep hold of that Jack Harrison pick, if they hadn't had to trade it away? Well, they didn't have to, but in the front office's eyes, I guess they did. But imagine if they have Jack Harrison one side, and you got David Akam the other side. You got Nikolic up front, and then behind him you have Dax, and you have this team.
I just can't imagine. I can't imagine Jack Harrison in a Chicago Fire out.
Not any longer. No, neither can I. Neither can I. But look, do you know who reminds me of Nemeth, who was at Sporting Kansas City?
Yeah,
he was very good. He reminds me a lot of him. And you're right. There's a thing about Major League Soccer strikers that if you can get a striker that has good composure and good finishing in front of goal, what I see a lot of the time is not a lot of strikers, and it's getting better, but not a lot of strikers in MLS are good at one-on-one situations with the goalkeeper. I see a lot of just straight at the goalkeeper or pull it wide or you know, do you know what I mean? So I think Nikolic is the mold of new MLS striker in that.
Yeah,
you
it's
know.
Refreshing. It's refreshing, mate.
It is.
And especially him coming in as a bit unknown. We didn't really know what to expect. And we know Chicago have maybe got it wrong in the past with some of their signings. So, no, it's definitely been refreshing.
But perhaps signing Schweinsteiger took some of the limelight away from him, and maybe he's thrived in that. Because there's less expectation, all the media attention's on Basti and Schweinsteiger. But there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good place to end it. I think that's going to be our show today. All right. So thanks for listening again, guys. Sorry it's been so long. Otis, where can people find you on Twitter?
OJL3?
He doesn't even know. It is. I can confirm. It's okay. This is breaking
news. It's OJL3.
It's OJL3. That's where you can find Otis. You can find him there. You can find us on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network, which is on iTunes, which is very exciting for me because I get it through. It little pops through to my phone in the middle of the night over here in England when it's out. So I get up at like 3 in the morning and start tweeting it out to all you people out there on the West Coast. And on the East Coast, frankly, just to get it out there as soon as possible because I love doing this and I love that you guys all listen. You can follow me on Twitter at Scott Nichols, and you can follow Beyond the Pitch at Beyond the Pitch. Thank you very much again for listening. We'll definitely have a guest lined up for you next week in some way, shape, or form, no matter who it is. We've got a lot of good stuff that we're working on. Cannot wait to share it with you. That's us signing off. Goodbye.